welcome to another edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. This is your host, E. Marcel Portout. Let me turn my mic up a little bit there. Here we go. Welcome once again to another podcast. Hope you guys had a good weekend out there. I know I surely did. Spent a lot of time actually with the baseball, working some Kennesaw State games. I saw some excellent victories on the diamond overall. With that, and caught up with a lot of mixed martial arts and racing, which we'll get to as well. So let me just give you a quick rundown of what to expect on today's show. First, I'm going to go over UFC 157, the event that took place Saturday over in Anaheim, California. Also going to discuss the Daytona 500, opening of the NASCAR season. Also going to discuss some miscellaneous news and notes in the world of college basketball, and even some Supercross motorcycle action that took place in Atlanta as well. And finally, it was a big weekend for women athletics and some prominent figures, so I'm going to talk about that a little further in my Ruffling My Feathers edition of my rant. So thank you once again for joining the show. Hope to have a good time. And once again, you're listening to the Sports Inquirer podcast on the Sports Inquirer Network. Sports highlight from my weekend was watching UFC 157 and all the activities that took place there. Really good event. I thought that everyone was represented pretty well. A little hesitant at first, seeing how the main event I knew would probably end within the first round or two. And when you have a main event for a UFC event, you always get concerned that the rest of the card will be looked at in a more negative light, because everyone looks at the main event for the main activities. But Rousey once again got an outstanding armbar submission victory in the first round over Liz Carmouche. Personally, I thought that Carmouche would last more than one round. If you read my blog post on sportsinquirer.net previewing UFC 157, I predicted that a submission would take place, and I knew that Rousey was the heavy favorite and deserved to win. But going into the fight, that was who the predictions would have gone for. But I thought Carmouche would use some stand-up and get some distance and actually last more than one round. She made it to 4 minutes and 45 seconds into the fight before she submitted. But before she got that, Rousey was tested. Rousey actually not only gave up her back in the first round, but Carmouche got a nice neck crank in there as well. If you're handling the neck area in a submission attempt, you can always have that submission and upset could take place. But it seemed like Rousey was able to use her hands and gain control, and she's an expert when it comes to that level of grappling. So I thought the main event was really good. And now get into what it means, I think, for sports overall, having a women's main event in a mixed martial arts event in a Ruffling the Feathers section. But just moving on with the card, I personally thought that Dan Henderson beat Lyoto Machida. Machida, I guess, won by the traditional scoring standards. And for those of you who are not as familiar with mixed martial arts, the scoring is similar to boxing. It's a 10-point must system, which means that after every round, you must give one fighter 10 points. And the opponent should get 9 or 8 and subsequent, down from there. 99% of the time, you'll get 10-9 rounds. You could score a 10-10. That's very, very rare. And you'll even see a 10-8 round if a fighter was dominated completely. But that's a 99.9% of the time you're going to see 10-9 rounds. And looking at the fight, I looked at it several times. If I were scoring it, I probably would have had it 2-1 for Machida. Machida did use his defensive style to gain distance. He got a lot of good front kicks in and landed some high kicks as well. So I think on the offensive end, technically, I would have given it to Machida 2-1. Henderson did a good job in the third round of getting his grappling and got using his takedowns to control the mat. But overall, if I was scoring it, if I was a judge and by the standards of MMA scoring, similar to boxing, you know, a 10-9 system, I would have given it to Machida 2-1. Now, if it was a street fight or just man-to-man straight-up talk, I would have gone with Henderson. I've been very critical of Machida in the past for his passive-aggressive fighting style. And Joe Rogan made a big point to talk about how a lot of people don't like Machida because his style is very defensive and it doesn't look very exciting. I don't mind him using that style and his karate techniques in the fights. But as we see in the past few fights with his fights against Hua and Ryan Bader and even back to Rashad Evans and Randy Couture, he used that defensive fighting style, but he was also using an offensive style as well and showed more aggression. I thought it was an excellent balance of seeing a tactician using that style to win the fight. But what I saw against Henderson on Saturday was a regression back to that old style that is not pleasing to the fans. I don't think that was a good reference of a more mature MMA-style fighter for Machida. And as I said, I don't know what the future is for both guys as well. I think Henderson, if he won that fight, he would have gotten the winner of Chael Sonnen and John Jones. I don't think that's going to happen now. It's tough to have a guy coming off a loss getting a title shot, even though Chael's getting one as well. But as once again I've said in the past, that fight is on a whole nother level of, that's not standard of how MMA should be. But anyway, I don't know if Henderson is going to, he'll get decent fights in the light heavyweight division. As far as a title shot, I don't see that happening. Even for Machida, Machida did win the fight, and I guess Dana White and the Zuffa organization said that the winner of the fight would get the title shot for light heavyweight. The two problems are, is I don't think Machida came off really well in that fight to sell against either Jones or Sonnen. And secondly, we've already seen Jones face Machida, and Jones dominated him. So I don't know if we're going to see a rematch of that fight for the light heavyweight crown. And both guys are older fighters. I don't know what their future is going to hold. But if I was scoring the fight, as I said, I'd probably gone with Machida. But as to the MMA fan or just a general, if you saw a fight and said who had better moments without scoring, just general like eye visual test, that's where I would have gone with Henderson. I thought that the Robbie Lawler Josh Koscheck fight was an interesting one as well. It's really tough. I watched this fight again several times as well. I thought the stoppage was a little early for Robbie Lawler against Koscheck. I thought Koscheck was still in a position to defend himself, even though Lawler did land, I think it was 4 consecutive head punches to Kos. But overall, I'm not in the ring. Herb Dean's an excellent referee. Many people consider him the best, and I don't see him as getting many early stoppages on his resume. But I probably would like to see that go a little bit longer. But I said, I'm not in there. I didn't see how Koscheck looked, you know, in his eyes. Maybe he was startled and was not able to defend himself. So I thought that was a little bit of an early stoppage. But that's a really good win for Lawler, returning to the 170-pound division for the first time in several years, and first time fighting in UFC in about 5 or 6 years as well. So that's a really good win for him. I really like and this is just a general overview on the preliminary fights. A few years ago, they were on FX this time, and the past used to be on Spike when UFC had a contract with them. This probably was the best preliminary set of fights that I've seen in a really long time. I thought that the Chisia-Kuvanen fight was really good. Now, a really good victory for Chisia. It looked like he was out-muscled and was going to be in some deep waters, but he ended up. Another fight that interested me as well was the outstanding 3-round battle for between Dennis Bermudez and Matt Grice. I thought both guys did a really good job out there, going hard. As I mentioned earlier, with the early stoppage with the Robbie Lawler versus Josh Koscheck fight, Herb Dean actually let this fight go on when Gryce was getting hit multiple times in the head. It looked like he was going to get knocked out many times in the third round, but it kept going. Gryce showed a lot of heart there. In the end, Bermudez got the victory. And there are some stories out there that Gryce actually might get cut with the recent rash of UFC cuttings that have taken place with the fighters. I would not like to see that. I'd like to see these guys go at it again. Both guys are really competitive and showed a lot of effort. So those are my thoughts overall on UFC 157. If you have any other opinions about the event, please go to Twitter and look me up under Sports Inquirer. Or send me an email at the sportsinquirer@gmail.com and we can discuss the MMA further. So right now we're going to take a little break here and discuss Daytona 500 here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. Showman and catch the second half or the last 30 or 50 miles or laps of the Daytona 500. And saw Jimmy Johnson get another victory for him, second one at the Daytona 500. Obviously, the big focus was on Danica Patrick. Going into the event, I actually thought if she finished in the top 15, that'd be a major accomplishment for her, despite being on the pole position. She actually finished in eighth place. I thought she did a really excellent job in her first Daytona 500. She was really in contention to get the victory. She was right there between second and third place for the last 10 laps or so until the final two laps, where she really just got caught on the upper or the outside lane and got caught in the draft of not being able to move forward. But still, eighth place is a very respectable finish for her. Ultimately, I thought that Greg Biffle would get the victory as well, because he was in prime position to get past Johnson in those last few laps, but he was unable to do it as well. I thought it was a positive sign for Dale Jr. to finish in third. You know, everyone is waiting for him to finally compete for the championship. He made the chase last year and did respectable in that position. I think this year he's part of the Hendricks team. Looks like he has some continuity with his staff. I think he's going to be a really big contender for the championship. The person I was actually really going for the most, I really wanted Mark Martin to get a victory. He's been in the race more than 20 times, never gotten the checkered flag victory. I wanted him to get the win, you know, for his career, because you know he's heading towards the end of his full-time racing career as far as the Sprint Cup level. So I wanted him to get the win. But overall, I think it was a really, you know, good event. A lot of wrecks in the beginning part of the race. And I actually did not see the first half of the race, but I heard through other people and I'm following on Twitter about all of the wrecks that took place for Tony Stewart and even Matt Kenseth, who actually led the most laps in the contest with 86. Carl Edwards, Jeff Gordon, Kyle Busch all were involved in accidents or had car troubles with their mechanics. So that actually allowed Patrick to move up a little more the charts. And you can't mention the Daytona 500 without mentioning what happened in the race nationwide the day before and that really nasty accident that took place on Saturday. That's unfortunately a part of the game. Well, that doesn't sound right. You shouldn't expect a car engine or a tire to go into the stands. That should not happen. But all things considered, it's racing, and I think the best that could have been done as far as safety goes, was done. I think that fence did a really good job of, I mean, a lot of people were, got hurt and ended up in the hospital. A few people were in critical condition, but they became stable, so there were no fatalities, you know, thankfully. But I don't know how you can prepare for a car engine and a tire to go into the stands in the, towards the end of a race. There really isn't much you can do with that. So luckily no one died from that. I'm glad the race went on, you know, Sunday. And if it didn't go on Sunday, that would have been really disappointing because, as I said, there were no fatalities. And that's just part of racing, that there may be a time, and it doesn't happen every race, it doesn't even happen every year, where you have car equipment actually going into the stands. Now, if it was happening every time you turned on a race and someone was getting a steering wheel or a lug nut to the chest during every contest, then yes, you may have to reconsider racing, period. But between the safety precautions that they put with the drivers and the barriers that they have for the fans in the stands, I think enough was done. And as I said, you don't want to see car engines and tires and other equipment go into the stands and people getting hurt. You don't go to an auto race wanting to have potential to experience that. But that's still just an unfortunate situation that no one intentionally did. So overall, that was a good race weekend. We're going to talk a lot more about NASCAR and some of the other racing series throughout the summer and even into the spring. But that was, I thought it was a really good Daytona 500. A lot of good attention for racing overall with Danica Patrick's presence there as well. So once again, we'll take a short little break here in the Sports Acquire Network and talk about some other miscellaneous loose ends that I saw this weekend. Disappointing thing I wasn't able to make it to this weekend was the Supercross events that took place at the Georgia Dome on Saturday. And really, I'm kicking myself right now for two reasons. One, it's a major event. I watch it every week on the Speed Channel. All of the 450s and a 250 guys go at it, you know, for Supercross. So I'm a fan of it. And secondly, my favorite racer actually won the race, James Bubba Stewart. Finally got a victory. First one in over a year. Last race he won was last year in Daytona, so I was hyped to see him actually get a victory. And for fans of his, and really fans of Supercross, you're so frustrated by his inconsistency. Yes, he's won two championships in his career, but it really should be more. And also, he's in the top five with overall victories. I think that was his 45th or 46th victory in the 450 class. But the guy, he's such an outstanding racer, but he takes too many chances and is so reckless. And you saw that even earlier in the year when they were in the West Coast with some of the races, where he would have some moments where it looked like he could take a lead, but he would just make some either mental or physical mistakes going into a corner incorrectly or not taking care of the loops and things like that. So I was glad to see him finally put together a complete race. And the key was getting that hole shot. He started off with the lead in that first turn. And once he got it from there, despite the you know, Filippone pushed him really strong, the defending two-time champ, and he ended up finishing second in the race. And as a Villapono put a lot of pressure on Stewart, but Stewart stayed strong and got the win in front of all of those fans. It's still going to be Davey Millsap's championship to lose. He leads by 20-plus points and only a handful of races left. I mean, it's almost a full race lead that he has on the competition. Now, he can always, you know, hopefully it doesn't happen, but he can always get hurt. He can deal with a mechanical issue, not even make the final main event. He can mess up with the qualifications in the heats, or even not even getting with a last chance qualifier. But if he stays on course and finishes top fives, he's going to win the championship, which would be really good for him. Another guy, just showing the diversity of the racing. I didn't even mention other guys like Dungey and Chad Reed. So that's probably the deepest that Supercross has been in a long time. And it's kind of interesting. As a fan, I prefer this style than the styles that, or this type of racing as far as the deepness of it. In past few years, you'd see Jeremy McGrath and Ricky Carmichael just dominate the entire season. And while I appreciate the greatness, and those are two of the best ever, I also like to see a chance where you have four or five guys, anytime I watch a race, getting the victory. So that was really fun to see. Caught up a little bit on the basketball. As a Syracuse fan, kind of sad to see their last Georgetown matchup with the Orange in the Big East Conference go down with them losing to Georgetown. As mentioned a few weeks ago when I did my last podcast, as far as my top 15 rankings and potential Final Four contenders, and I didn't mention Georgetown. Georgetown's an interesting story because they fit a lot of the qualifications that you would see in a potential team making a big run. They have a really good coach, John Thompson III. They have experience. They've been there before. As a team, they've been to a Final Four. John Thompson III's been there. And also, they have some veterans on the team. They play good defense. And they have an outstanding player that can get points at any time that they need. And that's with Otto Porter, who had 33 points in the victory. So that's a team that I would really watch out for, depending on how the seeds shake out and what their bracket is. Georgetown, I think, could make a major run towards a Final Four. A team that I'm going to stay away from for a really long time is the Miami Hurricanes, who just got dominated at Wake Forest, which is this year having a really lowly season. I even had the Hurricanes as high as number 2 when I did my last power rankings. I had Indiana number 1. And I had the Hurricanes number 2, and I could have made a case to have the Hurricanes number 1. And this was the first loss that they had with their full lineup. All of their guys were in there, and I did not like what I saw. They're still 2 games ahead of the Big East. They have a big matchup in the ACC, excuse me, and they have a big matchup coming up at Duke this week. And I think if once I see that, I'll have a better picture of really where I think they can fit in the national scope. But Hurricanes most likely going to win the ACC, have number 1 seed in the conference tournament. But I'm keeping a close eye on them because they're most likely, at worst, going to get a number 2 seed. If they really fall apart, maybe a 3 seed. But they're probably going to end up with like a 1 or a 2. And I think they're ripe to really lose in the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. Just I didn't like that game. That really rubbed me the wrong way. Another thing that intrigued me was New Mexico. I caught a little bit of New Mexico-Colorado State game matchup of 2 top 25 teams. I like Alford. He's an underrated coach. I know he kind of had a flame out in Iowa, and he ended his tenure there. But he's gone to New Mexico and really built a strong team. I was watching down the CBS Sports Network. Got to watch out for the Lobos, and I think they're going to make a big run as well. I caught a little bit of Kentucky and Missouri. I know Knowles is out. Kentucky, I think they're 1-and-dones are starting to really catch up with them. They're probably going to make the tournament. They're going to find a way to probably win 1 or 2 more games, and they're a marquee program. And don't deny it, NCAA, it's a business, especially when it comes to the tournament. And if you think that they're going to choose Kentucky over mid-major X, you know, whatever one you want to put in there, they're going to choose them over in Iona or choose them over a Wichita State. You know, teams like that, you know, you better win your conference tournament, because if they had a choice between Kentucky and one of those other teams, they're taking the Wildcats. In North Carolina, Tar Heels as well. I think Kentucky's a little bit better shaped than North Carolina, but even the Tar Heels got a nice win in the weekend as well. So when you look at the tournament, when they go over the bubbles and you have your Joe Lenardis and other guys with their projected brackets, you have to realize that this is a business as well. So if you are a major blue blood, like a UCLA or Kentucky or North Carolina, and you're a bubble team, unless it's really egregious, I think you're going to find your way into the tournament. Yeah, that's just the way the politics work of it, you know, overall. So, last thing, as far as the sports end, I did catch up a little bit of the NHL. Black Sox still without a regulation loss, doing outstanding up in Chi-Town. Right now, they're looking like the favorites to win the Stanley Cup, and they've done it before. A lot of those core guys are still with them, so they're rolling. Sabres fired Lindsey Ruff, who was the longest tenured coach in the NHL. I don't understand that move. You're going to fire the guy for they're getting off to a slow start, and granted, their defense has been below average. And actually, it's not real, and it's not just Ryan Miller's actually been solid. He's actually been, I think, playing okay. Not at his great level as far as goalkeeping, but he's been okay. They just let too many shots go. You watch their games, and there's the lack of defense is below Sabres standards. But with the lockout and the shortened season, I don't understand or see how firing him at this stage of the year is going to help your cause as the Sabres. Now, I would understand after the season they don't make the playoffs and they're not doing well. You fire him then, you let him go, and you get a new, fresh coaching search, and you build from there and let a new coach come in with a full training camp and you make some trades and some draft picks and you get it together. But I understand how you're going to release him 20 games into this shortened lockout season. And I know 20 games is halfway through this year, but still, I didn't understand that move. And I was harsh on Alexander Ovechkin in my podcast one or two episodes ago, saying that he was 30th in scoring, and that's why the Capitals are the worst team in the NHL. Well, hopefully he was listening to my broadcast, because he just had a hat trick in a 5-1 victory over the Devils on Saturday, and looked more like his vintage self. I like Adam Oates. He was a really good player. First-year guy, so I'm taking a little bit of a pass to see how he's going to develop as a coach. But overall, I want to see more of that. Hopefully he gets it together, and the league needs it as well. Crosby has held up his end and has been a solid player the past few years, even getting a Stanley Cup himself, and has carried the league from a promotional perspective. But Ovechkin, if he could give a boost to his play and to that market, that Washington, D.C. hockey market, which is really strong, and he's an international player as well, so you get the European fans and European experience with it overall, that would be really good for the league in general to have him play better. So there are some thoughts that I have overall on sports, and we'll take a little bit, another break here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. Me what happened with the Academy Awards. I saw maybe 2 or 3 minutes of it overall. I'm not going to lie, I did not see a lot of the movies that were nominated. I did see that Argo won, so I actually did see Argo. So I have all of the movies that I saw Argo, Lincoln, a few of the other ones that were nominated. I did like Argo the best, you know, as far as who I would have chosen to win the Academy Award for Best Picture. And that was okay. I thought Seth MacFarlane, I only saw about 5 or 6 minutes of his monologue and heard some things on the radio today. They played his boobies song. And I thought that, you know, Saw Your Breast. I thought that was funny. And I'm a big Family Guy fan. I loved Ted. As I said, I did not really see much of the award show, so I can't give a full commentary of how he did. The award shows, they're just so long and boring, I'll mess with the Grammys, because all the musical artists I actually do watch or do listen to, And the award show, there's live performances mixed with the awards. So it's, I like the live singing performances mixed in as well. So the Grammys I'll mess with and acknowledge. But the Academy Awards just seems so lengthy. I flip to it, and they're giving another award for cinematography or writing or editing. And half these people I don't even know. So I'll probably watch some of the... Between all of the things I watch on television and my blogs, I'll get what I need to see. I do mess with the fashion a little bit. You know, I'll see some of the recaps of that. I do have a fashion background. I know, turning in my man card every episode. But I do have friends in the fashion industry. So I do watch some of that stuff and see the dresses and tuxedos and have something to talk with them about and some analysis of it. So I'll check some of that out, you know, when I'm looking at it. But overall, I didn't see any of the Academy Awards, so you can save your tweets, save your emails about who I thought should have won or who didn't win and all of that stuff. Usually I end up seeing movies about a year afterwards. Matter of fact, I'm probably going to see Silver Lining Playbook tomorrow. That's my next movie. It's playing over here in the local theater. And I'll catch Life of Pi and some of the other ones. And I guess Zero Dark Thirty, I'll watch that probably within the next few months. But I just have so many other things going on in the life. Not seeing the movies by the end, by the time the Academy Awards come out, it's tough. You know, so those are my thoughts on the Academy Awards. If you have any thoughts as well on it, send them to me over on sportsinquire@gmail.com. And right now, we're going to go over what ruffled my feathers over the weekend. So being the sports podcast that we are, we also look at things just outside of the world of sports. And one thing that we noticed is, you know, a lot of issues as far as politics or with women rights or minority rights and things like that. Interesting crossover this weekend, though, in the world of sports when you looked at it, with the presence of Ronda Rousey and Danica Patrick competing in two sporting events or activities that are traditionally reserved for men. And those sports are mixed martial arts and NASCAR. Now, looking at the mixed martial arts side of things, women have been competing in the sports for a long time. You look at judo, look at wrestling, even boxing. We've had females in those combat sports for a really long time. But for the past year or so, you've seen the elevation of Rousey. And it's interesting because she's been on my radar since she finished. She got the bronze medal at the Olympics back in 2008. And I mean, seeing her in the past few fights, seeing what she's done. Obviously, she's very attractive. Everyone talks about that. And she has a really good personality. And all that stuff in her background is very interesting, both on and or in and out of the octagon. And it was publicized to great lengths by the UFC. But I always thought there have been other women who have been attractive and competed in the sport. But what is it about her? Is it the fact that as a society we become more progressive with seeing our women compete? Is it the fact that it's the internet age where I don't have to look towards two or three networks to find out what I need, where I can just find out about any athlete with a click of two or three buttons on my computer? And then looking at Danica Patrick as well, who's been on the radar a little bit longer with her time back in IndyCar racing, and she's transitioned over to NASCAR stock car racing in the past 2 years. And her performance in Daytona was outstanding, as we've talked about earlier. But is it also with her? Is it her looks and her attractiveness and the promotions with GoDaddy, with the Super Bowl commercials, and just in general, the blogosphere talking about her relationships in and out of the car and in and out of racing? is there a situation where we look at the personal lives and the looks of the athlete more than the actual performance? Now, as I said, I've followed sports my whole life, and I've had plenty of girlfriends and females and women sports fans that I've interacted with, and they will acknowledge the attractiveness or physical physique or even the personality of the male athletes that I follow. I don't really look at it at that end, just like I really don't look at it that way with Rousey and Patrick. I just look at them as athletes, honestly. I mean, obviously, as a man, I notice how they look, but I notice more how they compete. And I've been very critical of Patrick in the past with her lack of performance in congruence with the attention that she's been getting from the media. She really looked good yesterday racing and had that top 10 finish. I respect that. Rousey's been getting attention, but she can actually fight and does really well at it. And there are a lot of different fighters out there, particularly Miesha Tate, who I respect greatly for their fighting skills. But when I look at the sport, are we looking more for how they look or how they look? And there's a big difference in that. It's subtle but effective. And is it the responsibility of the athletic endeavors? Is it the responsibility of NASCAR or the UFC in relation to Rousey or MMA in general to highlight how they perform as an athlete or how they look performing as an athlete? And it's interesting to look at the balance as well. I have a niece who is competing in high school basketball and looking to become a Division I athlete and getting their scholarship opportunities and going through that whole process. And normally, looking at it from my side of things, I've always just looked at her performing and just seeing her deliver and play. But part of you wonders, like, are people just looking at her or her teammates or just the sport in general just to see how she looks or how she looks? Would we care about a Skylar Diggins from Notre Dame if she did not fit the role of being attractive while being one of the best players in college basketball? Where do we draw the line with it? That's just something that I've thought about and wondered how we look at female athletes in 2013. Is it possible for someone that's less perceived as attractive to be acknowledged and promoted for how to perform on the field and not just how they look off of it? Thank you for listening to another edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. This is E. Marceau Portute. Please subscribe to us on iTunes under the banner of the Sports Inquirer. We are on Twitter as well with constant news and notes. Just look up Sports Inquirer. If you want to send us an email, our email address is sportsinquirer@gmail.com. And finally, we are also constantly putting up content on the blog as well, thesportsinquirer.net. Next podcast, we're actually going to have our first in-studio guest, Condor Addison Gray. We're going to discuss the NFL Combine and other news and notes from the NFL that have taken place this offseason. And we're going to discuss some other events as well. Once again, thank you for listening to the Sports Inquirer podcast. Good fight. Good night.